Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Atapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parajana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. I'll start by reading from the teachings of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada as follows. He states, "The Supreme Lord worships His devotees. Although the Lord Himself is supremely worshipable, His devotees are the objects of and candidates for His adoration and love. The spiritual master is topmost among the Lord's devotees. Needless to say, one whom the Lord worships must be worth worshipping. My spiritual master is the spiritual master of the whole world, and my Lord, the Lord of the universe. My spiritual master's enemies are the enemies of the universal controller. Unless we root this conviction firmly in our heart, we cannot surrender fully at our Guru's lotus feet and cannot become true disciples. We will not realize our insignificant position and will not be able to chant the holy names while thinking ourselves lower than straw in the street and more tolerant than a tree. There is nothing more auspicious than serving the spiritual master. Among all kinds of worship, worship of the Supreme Lord is the greatest, but service to the spiritual master is even greater. Unless we are fully convinced about this, we cannot properly take shelter of our Guru and understand that he is our shelter, protector, and maintainer. The Vedas say, Sarvasvam Gurave Dadyat, everything should be offered to the spiritual master. If we do not serve the Guru by offering our lives, wealth, intelligence, speech and knowledge and body at his lotus feet, we will not become free of our absorption in matter. We will not give up our material desires. Our material disease will not be cured, and our illusion, fear and distress will not be vanquished. By surrendering completely at the Guru's feet, we become free from illusion, fear, and lamentation. If we aspire for the spiritual master's causeless mercy, then the spiritual master will bless us without duplicity." Those of you who are scrutinizing students of the teachings of our acharyas will recognize herein that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is paraphrasing many statements from Shastra. This last statement, that the spiritual master will bless us without duplicity, that is based on a teaching that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself often spoke of, that the Guru can give his mercy, either his real mercy or his cheating mercy. Depends on how we approach. If we want to cheat, we will be cheated. And we think we're getting mercy, but we're just... it's not the real mercy. We may get the mercy in the form of lab, puja and pratishta. Money, honor and position. But that's not the real mercy of the spiritual master. Continuing, the spiritual master is not a mortal being, he is immortal or eternal. The spiritual master is eternal, his service is eternal, and his servants are eternal. Therefore, we have nothing to worry about if we serve him. We will be freed from death. Since our material attachment or sense of being the doer is strong at present, we are anxious and miserable. Only the spiritual master can protect us from such formidable pride. Do we want his protection? It seems that we prefer to remain trapped in material existence. If we want to become free, we would engage in his service. Do we have such a mentality? What to speak of giving the Guru 100% of our energy, we are not even prepared to give him 1%. Unless we accept the essence of everything, Lord Krishna, as the goal of life, how can we achieve him? Our present pathetic condition is due to our not accepting the spiritual master as if he were as good as the Supreme Lord. This is the root cause of our continued attachment to matter. That is why I say one should not consider the spiritual master an ordinary being. He is the one who can give you unlimited life. He is the doctor of your soul, your protector, maintainer, benefactor, and selfless well-wisher. If we are not prepared to take complete shelter at his lotus feet, then we should expect to be cheated according to the degree of our negligence or duplicity. Think carefully about this. If we are not introspective, we will not be successful. If we do not surrender ourselves 100% at the feet of that personality to whom most auspicious Krishna has entrusted our well-being, how can he bless us? If we make a pretense of devotional service or become hypocrites while maintaining material desire, then the omniscient spiritual master will be compelled to deceive us. The Shastra states, Yadrishi bhavana yasya siddhir bhavati tadrishi. According to one's state of mind, one attains perfection. When you cheat your spiritual master and Krishna by serving Maya and your relatives without taking full shelter of Guru, then the Chaitya Guru will mercifully remind you that you have not yet become a true disciple. You are not yet following your spiritual master's instructions, and your heart still contains sinful desire. Since you are accustomed to listening to your duplicitous mind and adopting the ideals and conceptions of ordinary people, that is proof that you have not yet developed ears to hear my instructions. Therefore, you have been cheated. Again, it is the duty of a disciple to accept his spiritual master's arrangements for his life without reservation. If you do not, degradation is inevitable. O my friends, do not become sense enjoyers. Everything in this world is meant for the service of Guru and Krishna. If you try to usurp the objects meant for their pleasure, you will find only misfortune. Until you learn to see everything in relation to your spiritual master, there is no question of success on the devotional path. Heavy words, as we expect from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we expect from Srila Prabhupada, as we expect from all the gurus. Guru means heavy. The great acharyas, of whom Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur are certainly. Hare Krishna. Is there any need to do? Was it all right before? No. Tell him. Hare Krishna. जैसे है वैसे चलेगा, कोई तकलीफ नहीं है। हरे कृष्ण। हरे कृष्ण। या सो these are the great acharyas who by their very lives show us what it means to be Krishna conscious, and who in all ways, in everything they do, teach us to come to that platform. Guru means teacher. Just 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I heard for the first time, grace of Keshavanand Prabhu, that Sri Madhvacharya had identified the main or the definitive characteristic of a Brahmana as being one who teaches, certainly also studies, certainly also performs puja, certainly keeps himself clean and pure, but the core characteristic is one who teaches. So the acharyas are those who teach about Krishna consciousness by their by being Krishna conscious. They show others, even when they're not specifically teaching or thinking of teaching, just everything they do, we can see, we can observe as best we can from our limited platform, how they live, what they do, how they act, how they react to various circumstances. So this ceremony is called Vyasa Puja Mahotsav, festival of worship of Vyas. Vyas literally means he who divides. That name signifies that he has divided the Vedas, not in the sense of making them separate, but ordering them, putting them in editing, to make it to make the knowledge of the Vedas accessible to people in Kali Yuga. So anyone who speaks the same message is considered a representative of Vyas, or sometimes just simply called Vyas because they represent him. So this festival, you're coming here because you are kindly attached to me, but the Vyasa Puja means that, from my perspective, means that I have to worship Srila Prabhupada, and we all have to worship Srila Prabhupada. So from my perspective, you're all kindly coming here to remind me that I have to worship Vedvyas through the personage of Srila Prabhupada. And we can all be well reminded of this. Of course, we should remember, glorify, and act solely for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada at every moment of every day. But nevertheless, there are certain days set aside for remembering specific personalities, specific pastimes. We have Vamana Dwadashi, Varaha Dwadashi, Gaurapunima, Nrsingha Chaturdashi, Ramanavami. On these festival days, we remember particular forms of the Supreme Lord. There are other festivals like Janmashtami, Govardhan Puja, Vijayadashami, in which we remember specific pastimes. So similarly, there is this one day is set aside to concentrate our remembrance and our gratefulness on Srila Prabhupada. So I can thank you all for your contributions in Srila Prabhupada's service. Last night, the drama of the appearance of Lord Jagannath, we have to congratulate the actors and everyone else involved. I was planning to speak on the appearance of Lord Jagannath, but he appeared before he had the chance to do so. So he already appeared in the drama. Of course, he appears every day. Jagannatha Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatume. We thank all the devotees for coming here. And we particularly thank the devotees for their ongoing service in Srila Prabhupada's mission, especially Srila Prabhupada always emphasized the distribution of his books as the best method to preach Krishna consciousness. So many of you in December were working very hard to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And in some devotees here have been exceptional in that regard. In Salem, 22,000 Mahabig books, means mostly Bhagavad Gitas. Means in Salem and around Salem, and devotees from Salem going out. In Surat, I don't know about all of the devotees, but those who are working with Radhesh Prabhu and Aravindaksh Prabhu, they distributed. That's a group of Grihastha devotees. So, they have other things to do also. Of course, in Salem, a lot of the devotees were Grihasthas. They just, for 1 month, whatever other duties they may have had to do, they toned them down and they were just out and about. So in Surat, also 17,000, which is a relatively small group, 17,000 Mahabig books. That was with subsidy? No, full price. So congratulations to all of you. Sankirtan Prabhu in the well-known city of Brno. You've all heard of Brno, I presume. Well, no one ever heard of Salem till you went there either. I'd never heard of it myself. How many books did your group distribute? 3,000. 3,000 Mahabig books. So you may think, what's this? 22,000 in Salem, 17,000 in Surat, and 3,000 in Brno. Well, I challenge any of you to go there to check and see if you can do one big book, because it's not so easy, actually. It's a completely different thing. I mean, in India, people already pious to some extent, although it's decreasing all the time. But in Czech Republic, people have no inclination to take Bhagavad Gita. If you put Bhagavad Gita in the bookshop, you put 100 Bhagavad Gitas in the bookshop in Brno, and you come back a year later, there'll probably be 99 left. People don't, it's not something they have any, they don't even heard of Bhagavad Gita, most of the people. So congratulations to all of you. Of course, that's not the only service. There are many services to do. In Srila Prabhupada's mission, Srila Prabhupada has kindly kept us all very busy in his service. He also said that 50% of his mission is still to be fulfilled in establishing Varnashram. So some of you are very busily engaged in that also. It's in many ways more, although we're talking of Varnashram, simple living and high thinking, but to establish simple living seems like a very complex thing. Maybe because our minds are so complex, you have to unwind them and chant Hare Krishna and be happy. But even to do that, to get some land and to convince people to go and live there, and then all these different laws that exist, and money. It is complex, but ultimately book distribution and various forms of preaching, Varnashram, all these Gurukul, of course, Gurukul is intimately related with Varnashram, preparing Vaishnavas to carry forward in the future. Now we're looking at the little boys and thinking how we can bring them up, how we can guide them in Krishna consciousness. But the child is the father of man, as the saying goes. Who's the child now will be the father later. Who's the disciple now will be the guru later. So we're praying and attempting to train the children in such a way that what we're attempting with them now on a small scale, they will be able to, as they become older, they will be able to guide others and become spiritual leaders for many hundreds and thousands of such projects. So, yeah, this is, you've all come here to, I suppose it's meant to glorify me, as I may shamelessly say. But it's difficult for me also. It's easy to talk about the great acharyas, but Srila Prabhupada, he wanted us to be like that. We know that Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to be gurus, and he often spoke about that, but he much more often spoke about his disciples being pure devotees. The whole question of are the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, are they real gurus or whatever, it wouldn't arise if, well, it still might arise because it's an age of quarrel and contention. But we've heard the phrase of self-effulgent acharya. If the devotees are pure devotees, as Srila Prabhupada wanted, then there would be it would be much easier to accept that Srila Prabhupada's disciples should be gurus. Of course, it's not that everyone is expected to be on the level of Srila Prabhupada, but he expected, he would sometimes push his disciples, why are you not pure devotee? Why do you sleep so much? Why do you not work more? And devotees would say that, well, Prabhupada, you can do it, but we can't do it. And Prabhupada would say, why can't you do it? Everyone's expected to be a pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada was pushing everyone like that. As he said that, my spiritual master is pushing me, I am pushing you, and you are pushing, you should push others. Just like the train, how does the train, the Well, if the engine's at the back, then it pushes one carriage and that pushes the next carriage and that pushes the next carriage, and in this way it goes toward the destination. So Srila Prabhupada was pushing and pulling, pushing everyone to be Krishna conscious and pulling them up also. And as we heard in this quote from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the only reason that we're not becoming pure devotees is because of our own resistance, our own lack of desire. That is due to wrong desires since time immemorial. But those desires are to be purified by the process of devotional service. But it requires pushing and pulling also. That is also required. It's not mechanical in the sense that you can just think, I'll chant so many rounds and I'll do this and I'll do that and then automatically I'll be a pure devotee. Someone wrote to me recently and said, what do I have to do to guarantee that I go back to Godhead? It's not a mechanical process. There are rules and regulations to follow. There are formulae to follow. There are things that we should do, things that we should not do. But ultimately, it all depends on Krishna's mercy on us, which, as we've also just heard from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that is his causeless mercy. So we are not causing Krishna's mercy by chanting Hare Krishna or any of these things, but we are simply inviting his mercy, praying for his mercy. So in this festival and with so many activities going on, I sometimes think that we see sadhus, they live a very simple life. They simply live in one place and chant Hare Krishna. They have nothing, almost literally. Many sadhus, they almost literally have nothing. Just a little cloth, maybe a blanket, a begging bowl, and nothing more. So they have no anxiety. Simple, happy life, chanting Hare Krishna. This is what we want to establish in the Varnashram communities, that people can live simply and happily. If we don't want many things, if we don't desire, I want this, I want that, I need this, I need that, then we become free from anxiety. Simply living on the lap of Krishna, chanting his names. But for those who have accepted the responsibility of preaching Krishna consciousness in the modern world, we can't have such a simple, carefree life. We can work hard all our lives to attempt to develop a situation in which others can live simply and happily in Krishna consciousness. But for us to work toward that, it is not easy. And to deal with means to preach to try to encourage people to come up in Krishna consciousness. We find that the words of Shastra are indeed true, and that in Kali Yuga people's minds are very disturbed. That is the defining quality of a Brahmana is his propensity to teach. So similarly, the defining quality or bad quality of people in Kali Yuga. Hi upadruta. The mind is very disturbed. So it can be very difficult. It is very difficult to deal, to interact with so many people. We may desire to be a simple sadhu and just chant Hare Krishna and live simply and peacefully. That may not be possible for all of us. Of course, some devotees have to go live on the land and live simply and peacefully. And that inner peace has to be there. Otherwise, we can't begin to serve Krishna. Yes. Ashantasya kutasukam. There's no question of spiritual happiness unless we're internally peaceful. But our path, or those who are going to preach Krishna consciousness in this world, it must be Kantaka Koti Rudha Sri Bhakti Marga Yaha Kantaka Koti Rudha. In Kali Yuga, the path of devotional service is beset with innumerable thorns. So we have to accept that in Krishna's service. That is our mandate from Srila Prabhupada, which he inherited from his guru, that we have to preach Krishna consciousness. We may ourselves need much preaching to. Preaching that is for the perfect devotees. Brajabhashigan pracharake dhan. Those who are those who are actually pure devotees, they are fit to preach Krishna consciousness, but on the order that Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurakishore Das Babaji gave to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which he gave to all his disciples and which Srila Prabhupada gave to us, we have to preach Krishna consciousness as best we can. What can we do? Shakti buddhihin amayati deen. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays. We're fallen, we have no proper intelligence, we have no ability, but jogata bichare kichu nahi pai tomara karunasha. Although we're unqualified, we simply pray for the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and all the great acharyas, for their mercy that we may, in whatever capacity we can, execute their mission. And we see that some of you are being empowered for so many services in Srila Prabhupada's mission. For myself, I'm in the position of guru, which is the same position as that of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It's a grave responsibility. But actually, all of us are in the same position as Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Nimbarka Swami, and all the Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda. We're all in that category, in the sense that we're all disciples. Guru is primarily a disciple, not primarily a guru. From our vision, guru is definitely a guru, but from his own vision, he is not primarily a guru, he is only a disciple. His role as guru is as a service only. And we can learn. What do we have to learn from the guru? We have to learn how to be a disciple, what it means to be a disciple. So we learn that also from seeing how the guru is a perfect disciple. We see Srila Prabhupada in what appears to be a physical old age. He took up the order of his guru to preach in the Western world, and there was nothing at all about what he did that was easy. There was nothing about what Srila Prabhupada did in preaching the West that was not very difficult. Shivaram Swami, some years ago, related an anecdote that they had employed one of the top lawyers in England to fight a major case for the devotees. So this lawyer was almost 70 years old. He knew almost nothing about the Hare Krishna movement. So the devotees gave him the abridged biography of Srila Prabhupada to read, which he read. Lawyers, they're accustomed to read. So he read it quite quickly. And then the next time he saw Shivaram Swami, he said that he was very impressed by what Srila Prabhupada did going to the West, and you don't understand how difficult it was. This is a man who never heard Prabhupada's name until 2 days ago, and he's telling Shivaram Swami, who's one of Prabhupada's principal disciples, you don't know how difficult it was for him to go to the West and preach, because at that time Shivaram Swami must have been about 40 years old, because you don't know what it's like to be 70 years old. Whereas he did, this lawyer was 70 years old, so he knew that how difficult it can, things that you take as normal. Recently I saw one young devotee just, without thinking about it, just run up the stairs. And I thought, yeah, I used to do that too. Not now. And I've still got quite some way to go to 70, if I reach that age at all. So there are so many considerations. How difficult, I mean, that was even physically, heart attacks, and dealing with these completely mad people. It's very uncultured, but Srila Prabhupada saw a spark of interest in Krishna consciousness. Nowadays, if we had to deal with such people, we just wouldn't bother. We'd say, let's go and find someone better. If people are just so crazy and uncultured, we just, okay, give them some prasad. Let's find someone better. But Srila Prabhupada didn't find anyone better. They were the best. From his writings, it appears that Srila Prabhupada expected that the more educated, cultured, using that word within the Western context. We can also say that Srila Prabhupada often used to speak of gentlemen when he met some person who's educated and considerate in his behavior. So Srila Prabhupada expected the intelligentsia and the intellectuals, the cultured people, to take to Krishna consciousness. But when Srila Prabhupada first went to the West, they didn't. And frankly, up to the present day, still hardly they're coming. We're still getting all the, I'm not saying this in a bad way, but we're still getting people who are estranged from the respectable mainstream. They're the people who are taking to Krishna consciousness. So the point I'm coming to here is that Srila Prabhupada, despite all difficulty, and we may not know how, we may not be able to imagine what difficulty he took in executing the order of his spiritual master. Because we can look back on it now, it looks as if it was inevitable. Because Srila Prabhupada himself didn't complain, he didn't become discouraged. Therefore, it might not seem that it was, or because we think, well, Srila Prabhupada was a pure devotee, so it was just some game for him. But struggle was there, undoubtedly. And complete surrender was there. He didn't have to do it. There's one, you can hear that, Srila Prabhupada in 1966, talking to some group of people who are listening. Few people come to listen to his lecture. And the one woman is in America taking notes in New York City. She's very studiously taking notes and she's trying to get all the points. And Srila Prabhupada has mentioned Vrindavan. And she herself, who is that woman? We don't even know now. But she said that, actually, you're not happy here, are you? You like to be in Vrindavan. He said, yes, I'd like to be in Vrindavan. What am I doing here? Is the order of my spiritual master, is my duty. And he just said it, just like he said everything. He's just speaking the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That we are all spirit soul, we have to surrender Krishna. So Prabhupada said, yes, I'm here because it's my duty, my spiritual master ordered me. He just took it, matter of fact. There is no question of not executing the order of his guru, even though, for, as he said, I'm very happy in Vrindavan. I have no problem there. Everything is very nice. He said, I have no problem there in Vrindavan. Which just suggests how much problem he had in America. Everything troublesome, everything difficult for him. Vrindavan is just, the whole place is just set up perfectly for being Krishna conscious. And the whole of America is just set up perfectly how to forget Krishna completely, forever. So for Srila Prabhupada, although you think America is very convenient, but for Srila Prabhupada it's very inconvenient. But he took that up as his duty to serve his spiritual master. And he expected his disciples to practice Krishna consciousness. At if you take initiation, then at least you may say, well, I don't feel any taste, or I have this problem or that problem, but there's a duty. Once you've vowed, once we have vowed to follow four regulative principles, to dedicate our life to Krishna, you can't go back on that. So in this way we learn how to be a disciple. Srila Prabhupada was perfect guru because he is a perfect disciple. What does it take to be a guru? One should be a perfect disciple. Perfect disciple doesn't only mean to follow everything very nicely. That's the beginning. That is the beginning. As we often hear, devotees talking about so and so has good sadhana. If we say someone has good sadhana, what we generally mean is they follow the minimum standard given by Srila Prabhupada. But good sadhana should be the minimum and more, and it's almost expected that devotees don't follow the minimum that they're expected to follow. Therefore we say good sadhana if someone follows the minimum. So to follow everything that we're expected, that we're told to, that we accept to do as a disciple, then you're called a good disciple. But That's just disciple. That's not good disciple. That's disciple means one should follow at least minimally what is expected of one. And then on top of that, one should strive to serve the mission of the spiritual master. So to follow all the formulae, that is the minimum expected of a disciple. To chant 16 rounds, follow four regulated principles, rise early, attend Mangalati, take only Krishna Prasad. That's the minimum. That doesn't make one a good disciple, that's just a disciple. So we learn from Srila Prabhupada's example what it means to be a good disciple, what it means to be a guru. And for me, it's inspiring for all of us, I hope, to hear about Srila Prabhupada, to meditate upon Srila Prabhupada. But then, when I have to think of myself, I'm in the position of guru in instructing all of you, initiating these two main functions by which one is known as a guru, to give diksha and to give shiksha. So I'm attempting to do that, and I have to instruct you to give up sense gratification, to fully surrender to Krishna, while at the same time myself still working on all these things. It's a different situation to that of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, all these great devotees. So it is a dilemma or a dichotomy for myself that I have to encourage, I have to instruct you and take the role of a guru. I just read recently that description from Shastra of Lakshmi Devi describing the symptoms of uncultured people, people she doesn't like to live with. One of the symptoms was, two of the symptoms was one, that the disciples don't care to follow their gurus. And another one is that the gurus treat their disciples as friends. So the guru is to take the role of a guru, one has to take the role of a superior in the form of instructing others. It's not that the guru is supposed to be unfriendly, but for the benefit of the disciple and to execute his duty as he's told by his guru, he has to take a superior position. Otherwise, it's something like a parent not instructing the child. And that is increasingly common in the Western world, in what year was that? Must have been 1979 or thereabout. In Sweden, the great bastion of Adharma, they think they've got it all worked out, how to be perfect human beings, perfectly civilized. But from the dharmic perspective, it's most adharmic. They think that they're just perfect. We're equal to everyone. They're equality to everyone. I saw this because I was engaged in raising funds for purchasing vehicles for preaching in Bangladesh. So I just, one incident among the maybe thousands of people I met while selling some records. Many of you may not even know what records are, but how to describe some prior to CD players, there was some means of selling, of reproducing sound. So there was a woman, young woman, walking with her child who was about 5 or 6 years old. I offered the record to the woman, and her immediate response, she turned to her child and said, "Shall we buy it?" She's asking her child. I just struck, what is this? She's not only treating the child as an equal, she's treating the child as a superior, probably because she didn't have a husband, and it's the nature of women to need to be directed, but she took shelter of her child. So for the guru to treat the disciple as an equal, that is a sign of adharma. So it's a duty for me to take a superior role. Most of you here are born in India, where the culture up to the present day has some idea, it's still there, some concept of relationships between guru and disciples. Nowadays it's mostly, this concept is mostly transmitted via TV serials, which show, often in a highly speculative way, various pastimes from Shastra, and there are modern gurus who are like a semi-spiritual version of rock stars, but still the concept of guru and disciple is there. And this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was quoting Sarvasvam Guruve Dadyat. Actually, the guru of the demons, Shukracharya, we'll find that in Bhagavatam, he said that to Bali Maharaj, Sarvasvam Vishnave Dadyat. What is the next line? Murkam Vartishyate Katam. He said, "You fool, if you give everything to Vishnu, how will you live?" He wasn't a very good guru. Shukra is the kind of guru who should be rejected, because he forbade his disciple to give everything to Vishnu. But in this world, the disciple does so via the guru. One is supposed to surrender one's life in the service of the guru, seeing that the guru is surrendered in the service of his guru, and it's all going to Krishna. So that's the dichotomy for me. I have to be honest. I think it's not difficult to understand anyway, that what I know, what I've learned from Srila Prabhupada, what I experience, that is, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, that is my life now. Whatever course my life was going on previously is completely changed by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And I have nothing else to do in this life but to serve Srila Prabhupada. And not only this life, Chokhu Dano Dilo Jai Janme Janme Prabhu Shai, in every life. And on his order, I have to try to guide you also. My inability to do so, that is there, but because there is his order, then everything can be perfect by His order and His mercy. So, if by accepting His order, I'm to teach and to initiate that His mission can be served, then certainly it should be done. And we're seeing that many of you are serving His mission so well by distributing His books, working hard in His mission, establishing Varnashram projects, Gurukuls, chanting Hare Krishna. There's so many things to be done in His service, dedicating your life in His service. So, despite my inabilities, if I simply attempt to convey to you whatever I have understood and received from Srila Prabhupada, and I would be ungrateful if I were to say that I have not received anything. It's everything. Everything I've received from Srila Prabhupada. My ability to accept it, that is my misfortune. But I know that He has given us everything. And that is my duty to try to convey that to you. And it is my prayer that my own inability, my own anarthas, not be prominent, but that His mercy be prominent, so that you can all avail of His mercy and dedicate yourself more and more in His mission and go back to Godhead and take many others with you. So that is my prayer on this day and every day. Hare Krishna. Yeah, 9:30. We're supposed to stop here at 9:30. I can continue for half an hour. All right. Yeah, talking about my own inabilities, drawbacks. But then Srila Prabhupada said that, again going back to 1966, before Srila Prabhupada made any disciples in America, he stated that one has to be very careful, one has to accept a perfect person as a guru. If one accepts a perfect person, he can take perfect guidance and advance on the path of perfection. But if one does not accept a person who is perfect, then one will be misguided. So Srila Prabhupada said that one has to be very careful to accept a perfect person as a guru. So, what am I doing saying that? Knowing full well my imperfections. Well, here in Srila Prabhupada's words, I can say how I am perfect. What is my perfection by which I have the boldness to take this exalted role? Here's a quotation from a lecture of Srila Prabhupada given in Hyderabad in 1972. Srila Prabhupada said, "So we should follow four words." So much meaning is there. We should follow. Our whole life can be completely perfect. Actually, if we take these three words, we should follow. Or even just one word, follow. But of course, we have to know who to follow, why to follow, how to follow, But this is the one word which can make our life perfect if we can understand the import of it. The word follow, anugatya. In Gauriya Vaishnav terminology, this word is very important. Anugatya means going behind or going in sequence or simply following. Srila Prabhupada said, so we should follow. This is called parampara system. As Arjuna understood Bhagavad Gita, if we understand in that way, then we are perfect. I may be imperfect, but because I understand Bhagavad Gita as it was understood by Arjuna, I am perfect. How you can be imperfect and perfect at the same time? This is not for logicians. If someone is perfect, means in all respects, if there's a slight deviation from the standard of perfection, then it's not perfection. Because perfection means in all respects complete, without any blemish. If there's even some slight thing wrong, then it's not perfect. Because perfect means completely, wholly, full and without any blemish. But Srila Prabhupada says here that even if I am imperfect, I can be perfect. How is that? By understanding Bhagavad Gita as it was understood by Arjuna. Because, Srila Prabhupada says, because the knowledge I am distributing, that is not imperfect. Just like a poor peon. Sorry, a post peon. A post peon is delivering you $1,000. So he may be a poor man, but the $1,000 he is delivering, that is a fact. That is not a bogus thing. Because he has not manufactured something, he has received that money order from the post office. He's asked to deliver to such and such a person. His honesty is to deliver the money order as it is to the bona fide person. That is his perfection. It's a simple point to understand. That the post peon is not expected to be a perfect person. It's not expected, anyway, no human being can be perfect. If we're talking about the material sphere, someone can be spiritually perfect. There's no such thing as perfection in material life anyway. So the post peon, he may have so many personality defects. He may be short-tempered. He may be an alcoholic. He may have so many personality defects, but in his job of delivering as a peon, he has to deliver one thing from one place to another. He has to deliver $1,000, he delivers it. He's honest and he's competent. So he does his job perfectly. And who deputes the person, the post peon, from the person who employs the post peon? From the employer's perspective, it doesn't matter whether that man is a alcoholic, short-tempered. Well, he shouldn't get short-tempered with the customers or be drunk on the job. But if he does that job, okay, you take $1,000, he's trusted. Take it, deliver it. He does it daily. Responsibly, competently. So as a post peon, he is perfect. This is the point being made. He has received that money from the post office. He's asked to deliver it to such and such person. His honesty is to deliver the money order as it is to the bona fide person. That is his perfection. because he's delivering $1,000, he doesn't require to become a very rich man. He may be a poor man. Similarly, a guru is perfect when he delivers the words of the superior authority as it is. Then he's perfect. He may be imperfect in your estimation, but that is his perfection. That he is not misleading people by becoming a so-called rascal scholar and interpreting it in a different way and misleading the whole population. That is perfection. People say so much about me, Srila Prabhupada says, that I have done some wonderful thing. This is Srila Prabhupada speaking in Hyderabad in 1972, when great crowds of people are coming to see him, being astonished by his having gone to the West and preached Krishna consciousness. If you want, you can catch Basu Ghosh Prabhu and ask him more about this, because he was present in all these lectures and he was helping to organize it and everything. He was a young man at that time. So, Srila Prabhupada continues. People say so much about me that I have done some wonderful thing. But I say that I am not a magician. I'm not a magician. My only credit is that I am presenting Krishna as he is. That's all. I'm not diluting Krishna. If we hear Srila Prabhupada's lectures in 1966 to American people who we couldn't even say they're new in Krishna consciousness. They really have very little idea about Krishna consciousness. And gradually, some of them picked it up. But their knowledge of Krishna consciousness was zero. And if we hear his lectures later, 1972, 1976, it's the same message. Same thing. And we can understand that before he came to America, he was also speaking the same thing. So it wasn't that Srila Prabhupada in 1966, he was from an external point of view, you might think it's some pathetic figure, just trying to teach something which no one's interested in, and what's he doing? It's just ridiculous. That's a disciple of one of his godbrothers wrote, Srila Prabhupada was trying to say, come and join me, help me here. And he wrote back, and in this brahmachari at the time, he wrote in one of his reply letters, he used the word ridiculous. Because he thought, you're out there in America, you're just alone, you can't do anything. That he must have been thinking this. And Srila Prabhupada wrote back very strongly, so you might think it's ridiculous. Srila Prabhupada, he never thought it was ridiculous. Certainly it wasn't ridiculous. Later on people could see, but at the time you might see, what's he doing? It's hopeless. It's not getting anywhere. What is he trying to instruct those people for? So it's the same message. Srila Prabhupada didn't change the message. Same message. People may take to it, may not take to it. But he has to give the same message. Because he has the faith, that faith in Krishna's words, that we don't have to change anything. Just present Krishna's message as it is. And then Krishna sends someone, let them come. He'll train them more. If they don't come, still we have to speak the same message. We may think our preaching is successful when many people come. That's true in one sense, but we have to see what they're coming for and what they do. First characteristic of successful preaching is that it's preaching Bhagavad Gita as it is. Otherwise, there are so many successful preachings. There are so many Sri Sris and Babas and Amas. They're very successful in collecting people. But what is the use of such preaching? So by Krishna's mercy, I haven't discovered any new techniques of preaching. By Krishna's mercy, I still feel that what Krishna speaks is, and what Prabhupada gave us, what Krishna spoke is far superior to anything I could imagine. It's the truth. It absolutely makes sense. Everything Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it's we can see sense gratification is the cause of suffering. We can see this is not a religious belief. It's not something that will be very popular, but it's a fact. So we can bring thousands of people to some kind of with no substance whatsoever. What is the use of that? If people do not understand even this first basic point, yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kauntayana teshu ramate buddha. There's no spiritual life without understanding that sense gratification traps us in this material world and causes us to suffer life after life. Spiritual life begins with this understanding. So if we don't talk about it a lot and teach that to others and preach that, then what is the preaching? That has to be there. Without understanding this, then you can chant Krishna Naam even for many lifetimes and you won't advance in Krishna consciousness, because we never untied that example of Bhaktisthan Sahasrara Thakur. The boat is tied to the stick, which is hammered in to the ground, or to the, there's a word for that which I can't remember. So that the boat is tied up to the shore. We're rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing and rowing, and we're not going anywhere. So that tied up to the shore means our material attachments to sense gratification. We have to say these things. So by Krishna's mercy, Prabhupada's mercy, I didn't discover any better preaching technique than speaking Bhagavad Gita as it is. And of course, all the other activities have to go on. Harinam, Sankirtan, book distribution, all these things. But in the role of Guru, one has to speak the message of Bhagavad Gita as it is, as we just heard from that quotation from Srila Prabhupada. So that's really all you have to do. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jare deke tare koha, Krishna Upadesh. Amar Agyai Guru Hoya Taro Edesh. That's how one is a guru. By speaking Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. So we should understand this. Now, every year at this ceremony, I state what I'm working on in writing, because many of my disciples ask me, what are you writing now? So, just to inform you all, many projects going on simultaneously. The book of mine, which should be published this year, Balaram book, should.
You have to be more positive than that. Book on Balaram that's been sitting around in my computer in an unfinished state for many years, like many other books. So Kishore Prabhu is working on that. Well, that Patropadesh is also, it's finished, but almost ready for publication. That's not really a new book, that's just selection from some of my letters. So a book on Balaram, and then two major projects, both in the size, the scope, and the importance of the message, which I'm working on, which won't be ready by next year, and probably may not be ready even in 2 years or more, are the books on Vaishnav culture, etiquette, and behavior. Especially in the Gurukul, we want to teach from the beginning what are the proper behavior for Vaishnavas. I'm going to point out something now because it seems to be becoming popular. I corrected one of my disciples for doing this, and yesterday I saw in the drama team, anyone from the drama team here? Okay. Uh-huh. All right, you are guilty of this crime also. It's not a crime, but I have to correct you. This, I'll just perform one gesture just to show you that you shouldn't do it, which is going like this. Please don't do it. It's, at least in the Bengal culture that I lived in, it's considered very rude. It's something from the West. So the culture that's been going on in India from practically time immemorial, many of things didn't change for hundreds and thousands of years. So there's no need to introduce all these things. It's not a major fault, but all these things we should train the children, and actually this Brahmin initiation should be trained in all these things, not just I've been around long enough, it's time to hang a thread on my shoulder. But the Brahmanas, they should be ideal spiritual leaders. So they should know all these things. So that's one thing I'm working on. And then that, of course, you may have heard before because it's something that has been in the offing for more than 20 years now. But I'm concentrating on that more now. I am also revising the Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. Some revision and some new things to be added, not much, but when you say not much of such a big book, it still comes to quite a lot. Then another Well, it doesn't work like that because it's subject wise. Anyway, another book of major importance, which if it had been published 20 years ago, maybe ISKCON would not be what it is today. It might be in a better shape. The mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada. It's still in a beginning stage, a very important book, because so many people are coming to the movement that is in which it said founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada. But what are Prabhupada's, why did he form this society? What did he expect the members of the society to do? What instructions did he give them? What were his aims in doing so? All the members of this society should know that. But one reason that they may not know very well is because Srila Prabhupada, he said many things and in many places and many circumstances and bring it all together and analyzing it is a major task. But that is essential for the future of our Krishna consciousness movement here. Now this body that I'm presently situated in is, by Western calculation, 57 years old. I just mentioned how the lawyer in England was astonished that Srila Prabhupada, at the age of 70, could do so much. 70 is usual life expectancy. In Shastra it's stated 100 years in Kali Yuga, but it seems to be generally less. In the Bible it speaks of 70, which means 70. So we can't expect that there will be many more of these festivals with myself, because I don't expect to be around very long, but you all have to take up this work. You're all doing that also. I'm not finished yet, by the way. It's not that I'm going to retire, but at this age, you know, there isn't that much time left. You can't expect to have that much time left. So much work to do to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on so many fields. We're talking about a lot of emphasis in the last few years has been on, among my disciples, on Varnashram and book distribution, Varnashram and Gurukul, and prior to that and still going on book distribution. So many activities on so many fronts. And atheism has become prominent in the world recently. That is to be combated. The whole world is going to hell, almost literally. There's so much work to do in preaching in so many ways. So none of us can do very much because there's so much to do, but we're all very small beings, but I trust that you will continue to take up this mission and be responsible and carry it on into the future. Hare Krishna.